Mr. Crafty, could you tell us about your childhood before you came to Harford County?
I was born and raised in Chicago, Illinois. I lived there until I was 26 years old and have not lived there since. I was schooled in the public school system there through high school and then went to the University of Chicago for my bachelor's degree. I worked 4 years in the Chicago industrial area as a chemist and then returned to school for advanced degrees, and that schooling was interrupted by World War II. Would that answer the first question? That would go beyond my childhood. Would there be more details on my childhood?
Okay, could you maybe tell us about what your home life was like, some of the chores or your brothers and sisters?
Yes. We had a very close-knit family, just my brother and I. And of course, the dominant factor, I would say, in my youth was the fact that I had a brother who was 4 years older with whom I wanted to keep up in every detail. And that caused a lot of rivalry, and I'm certain it caused a lot of trouble and pain for my mother and father. My brother's still living and is retired in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. The training I had as a in high school was at Tilden Tech, where we had a course similar to that in Poly in Baltimore. It was a standard academic course, and on top of that was laid technical education, shop training, and that has been an important factor, I believe, in the rest of my life, because I've been able to do things, mechanical things, that many men would probably not even dream of tackling. So it has made possible, for instance, the restoration of this house here, which would have been prohibitive if we had to employ somebody. But I spent a lot of my spare time in doing it myself, based on knowledge I obtained as a youngster at Tilden Tech. So that was an important part of my early training. I also entered into athletics in high school and was active and did well in wrestling. Did some soccer also, but wrestling was the sport I followed my brother's footsteps. He was an outstanding high school wrestler, and I didn't reach his level in high school, but I did do very well in college at the University of Chicago. Big Ten, I was not a Big Ten champion, but I was in the top ranks of the Big Ten wrestlers. And that surely colored my work here in the county because, you'll probably spot this later, I was active in getting the, I've been called the father, the grandfather of amateur wrestling in Harford County because I worked with the Bel Air High School athletic department in establishing a program, a wrestling program there, and it has swept the whole county. It's a very popular sport right now. So these are things that once you are directed toward as a youngster, you continue as an adult. I do favor a strong sport program in high school, but not at the expense of academics. Let's have both. Giving preference to the academic.
Or in your youth, what was your social life like, and what type of things did you use to occupy your free time?
As a youngster, or
yes,
right? Well, the extracurricular program in high school was varied and extensive at Tilden Tech. Every day I had something to do after school, after high school, and I returned to home just before, in time for supper. If it wasn't wrestling, it might have been a sign painting club or different clubs and organizations, the student council, the honor society, so forth. I did get into that at an early age in high school, and these activities occupied my time after school. Some of the school time too, study periods and so forth. But I did learn then that one could keep busy without spending much money, just a lot of effort and a lot of fun. Very broadening.
Well, when you first came to Harford County, what were some of the changes you've seen from coming from Chicago, the large city, to Harford County, which is more like a rural section?
Well, my first impression of this area was obtained from the tailgate of a 2.5-ton Army truck. I was finishing Officer Kennedy School at Edgewood Arsenal. We had an exercise involving movement of motors and trucks through the county and then back to the arsenal. We spent several days in this area, in the area of Harford County, away from the arsenal. And we came down Main Street in Bel Air toward evening, and from the tailgate of that truck, which was appeared to be the prettiest town I'd ever been in. Main Street had trees on each side of it that met in the center. It was a lovely, appearing, neat, interesting town. It made an impression on a young man whose experiences had mainly been urban in and near the south side of Chicago. Really, I was raised as a youngster in an area called Back of the Yards. Stockyards are no longer in Chicago, but there was a great concentration of the slaughtering industry. So I was very much impressed by that. And then, wasn't very much longer, I found myself back in Harford County because of transfers in my job. After the war was over, the organization in which I worked, Chemical Warfare Service, had changed its headquarters and organization, and I found my job at Edgewood Arsenal. That's where I began my associations with Harford County, still a beautiful rural county, offering many advantages of city living, but also the advantages of country living, which are rapidly disappearing. Mm. So that's how we came here, because at the end of the war, I had acquired a wife and a baby, and there was no room for us in Chicago. There was a terrific housing shortage there, mostly nationwide, but especially in Chicago. And the new assignment here in the East at Edgewood allowed me to rent government housing at a good price. At least it was a roof over our head. We came out here and lived under those conditions for almost 4 years before we went into the civilian market and purchased this place here. We call it Hearthside. So we adjusted to the rural life very easily. My wife had rural connections, although she was raised in small towns in the Middle West. I had no problem adjusting to the rural life because I had spent my youth on farms in Indiana. I spent several weeks each year there and had good contact with the agricultural scene. So it was a wonderful combination of city wages and country living in Harford County that induced us to stay here. Two other things were important. The terrific sense of history. None of this is present in the Middle West. After all, Chicago was incorporated in 1833. Here, the history went back, the Western civilization history went back 300 years. It made a great impression on us. And the third thing was the beautiful rolling landscape. We in the Middle West have woods and we have plains. We have no hills where I live, no forests. Here we don't have woods, we have forests. The rainfall is so great that the trees respond and grow to great sizes. So these three things caused us to want to live in Maryland. In a lovely place to raise a family.
Oh, yeah. Or, I guess during the Second World War, what type of things were you doing then for the government?
I worked for the Chemical Warfare Service in Chicago. The mission there was to obtain satisfactory protective clothing and gas masks and other items of chemical warfare. I had been in the rubber industry following my graduation from Chicago. I'd been in the rubber industry for 4 years. At that moment, there was a terrific shortage of rubber technologists because, along with Pearl Harbor, came loss of our natural rubber resources. This country had to very swiftly economize on its use of rubber, experiment and adapt to reclaimed rubber to industrial needs, and also bring in synthetic, learn how to make it, and then learn how to process it. So the demand for rubber technologists was very high. And that was what took me away from my studies at the University of Chicago, leading to a master's degree, and got me into industry. In this case, of course, it was the Chemical Warfare Service, where I represented the government in supervising the development of new processes for defensive gear. The greatest fear of our allies was an attack from high altitude using mustard spray by the Germans, by the Axis forces. The defensive forces on the ground would have had to been completely equipped with anti-gas clothing. And one item they didn't have was a suitable rubber boot that firemen could wear while fighting blazes under an attack of spray, mustard spray. So there was a crash program to develop a suitable boot that would be slipped over conventional footwear. And this was a project to which I was assigned and went to the U.S. Rubber Company in Mishawaka, Indiana. We completed that work in less than 9 months. All these boots were shipped to London, ready for a blitz involving mustard spray, which never developed. Meanwhile, while at this U.S. Rubber Company, I met my wife-to-be. I met her in September of 41, and we were married in April of 42. Of course, Pearl Harbor occurred in December. So, in fact, my first date with my wife was on Pearl Harbor Sunday. Having met her at the U.S. Rubber Company. So these small events have been very important in my whole life.
Well, once you did finally come to Edward Arsenal, what type of work did you do there after the war was over?
there was and is a continuing program for weapons development, chemical warfare weapons, and for defensive measures. So I'm sure it still continues, perhaps in a little different direction, but at that time it was a improvement of the weapons that were used during World War II, modifications, improvements, hoping to get a great improvement over a given weapon. I was involved in the early days then, right after World War II, in phosphorus smoke. Phosphorus was the best smoke-producing agent available during World War II. It was very useful to the Allied forces, but it had shortcomings. And my main work at the first at Edgewood Arsenal was to overcome these shortcomings. And we did realize a great improvement in the efficiency of phosphorus smoke. Mm-hmm. I believe today they've gone far beyond that. Then, later at Edgewood Arsenal, I became involved in the toxic gas program involving the new technology in chemical warfare called the G agents, G standing for German agents. They had developed a group of nerve gases, and we had none, and we quickly, our country needed a capability in use of nerve gases, and I was involved in that. There are many problems, and I worked on several of them. Then, of course, the program changed to a pure research program involving behavior of materials in very finely divided form called aerosols, and that work continues today. Then it was a very rewarding tour there. It had its ups and downs, but it was a valuable experience. I was able to do some publishing, contribute to the literature to some extent.
Well, can you tell us about some of that literature and that you worked with?
Well, not very much because it was classified then. It may not be now, but I could say a few words about the behavior of things in finely divided form. There wasn't much known about the performance of materials as they are made smaller and smaller, so small that they float in air. So we worked on this sort of thing, the stability of materials after you subdivide them. They develop all kinds of different characteristics.
Yes?
Okay, excuse me.
You're just finishing up about your work with Edward Arsenault?
Yeah. Well, I retired in 1977, New Year's Day, 77. So I completed my government service there and have been doing more farming than I did before, although I did a little farming all the while. We have a small woodlot. We have a large garden and chickens, including sometimes turkey, guinea fowl, and sometimes even pheasant. So we've had a rural existence here. It's been very pleasant and enjoyable. Then, since my work at the Arsenal, I've been retired and going into the restoration of early American furniture, which we find around here. We used to find it, now it's pretty much gone, but as you notice, our house is pretty much furnished with old furniture, which was made in the time of excellent taste. Tastes have probably degraded since 1800 in this country, and we treasure those things that we have here from that period. And I enjoy working in wood. We have a wood lot, and I've just begun to harvest the wood for some own projects. I enjoy that. I have a small shop in the barn, some woodworking machinery in the basement. Then I've been active in community work, of course, all the way through. I don't know if you have that in your background there, but I was involved with the Hartford Symphony Association. We brought the Baltimore Symphony out here twice a year. That takes a lot of work. You have to sign contracts and arrange publicity, sell tickets, and actually put the concert on. So that work is performed by volunteers, especially, for instance, Mrs. Robert Dean and Mrs. McComas, and many others in that area. But I did assist and found it very, very rewarding. Then the barbershop course of Hartford County has been a source of pleasure for me. I tried out for it, was able to make it, and have been rehearsing at least once a week and singing maybe once or twice a month for charities and so forth, sometimes paid concerts around the county, Baltimore County. That's been very enjoyable. So we found living here in Hartford County to be just a great pleasure.
Or could you tell us about Hearthside, Bicely?
Oh, sure. That goes back to my Chicago day. How powerful the newspapers can be in a person's life. When I was a young man, younger than you perhaps, the Chicago Tribune had an article about a new movement in this country called the American Youth Hostels. founded in New England by Isabel and Monroe Smith. They were school teachers, and they saw the problems of the inner city, how youngsters in the inner city never get out to see a farm or a country road, that sort of thing. So they modeled a group here after the a European counterpart called the youth hostels. This was founded, the European version was founded in Germany by Richard Sherman well before World War II. Of course, during World War II, it was taken over by the military at that time. And on the other hand, in this country, the American youth hostels surely suffered a loss of interest, but then it had been off to a good start before World War II. So shortly after I got out of college, I was able to join the American youth hostels. I was able to put my bicycle on the train in which I rode out to Greenfield, Massachusetts, and I went up one side of the Delaware River and crossed over and came down the other side, staying at hostels. This is an inexpensive way to tour the country, but you have to proceed under your own steam. You either have to walk or bike or horseback ride or canoe, that sort of thing. Now that interest in the American youth hostels came from my reading an article in the Chicago Tribune. And that has really colored our existence here in Maryland. The memories of hosteling as a young man, your age, in New England stayed with me. And when I had children approaching hosteling age, let us say 10 or 12, I wanted them to try out hosteling too. So we took our bikes and my two children, at that time we had two, and their friends, and six of us went up to Pennsylvania. We began in Philadelphia, and we went west to Reading. And we came back to Philadelphia from Reading via railroad. So we hosteled out, and we came back to our starting point. And from that time on, the Hearthside Bicycle Club has had several tours each summer to different parts of the country. And we have covered, we have traveled to our point of biking by airplane, by boat, by automobile trailer mostly, and by school bus. We've covered Pennsylvania, Massachusetts, West Virginia, Washington, D.C. area, Cape Cod, Vermont, New Hampshire, Nova Scotia, all on bikes using the American youth hostels, and in the case of Canada, there the Canadian youth hostels. We think it's a fine movement. Crowded road conditions are forcing the bikers off the road. It can be hazardous in certain places to hostel, but there still is a lot of interest in it, and you see this on the road when you see the youngsters with their 10-speed bikes and helmets and so forth. It's a status sport now, just like all the others. You put a lot of money into it, but you don't need to. It's wonderful, though, to get away from home and travel with just a pack on your back, or rather on the bicycle. We don't recommend backpacks at all. You put the pack on the bike, and then you are on your own. You have to get your own meals. You're honor bound to prepare your own meals and sleep in these simple overnight accommodations. Sometimes there's just cold running water. Sometimes there's no pillow. But in general, they are improving. The state requires these things to maintain minimum standards. It wasn't that way in the old days. In the old early days of youth hosting, the idea was to live a Spartan existence and live on a dollar a day. That would include the hostel fee of 25 cents, 75 cents for three meals. You could do it, but not today, due to inflation and due to inflated appetite, too. So that's how the Highside Bicycle Club originated, and that's the present state of it's going. It's under the sponsorship of Dick Swanky, who runs the DS Cycle Shop in Emerson right now. I recommend it, though, for youngsters. They need some supervision for safety's sake, but it's possible to have a lot of fun out on the road. Mm. It's almost like hitting the road the old days, and then just hit the road to cool themselves before they settle down. That was a German custom, I believe. A period of wandering, isn't that? You heard the expression, have you? Wandering?
Oh, yeah.
It's a wandering period. And it helps you settle down to routines that come with school and so forth. That's the story of the Highside Bicycle Club, but it was named after this place here, which had seven hearts. And we have five left. We had to close up two because of central heat. But this is called Highside, and we met here. This is a strong point. Highside Bicycle Club now is based on the DF Cycle Shop. Are you interested in the Little League, or you might call it pre-scholastic wrestling? We found that, I guess I'd better backtrack and say that when we first came to Harford County, and for many years, the county had no park system, no provision for organized athletics. A group of youngsters in a certain locale were interested enough, they could form a baseball team and find the farmer who might let them play baseball in a pasture. And this is the way it was for many years after we came here. But perhaps in 1955 or so, the Bel Air Lions Club found enough money, raised enough money to set up a park where Bynum Park is presently. That would be Route 22 in Bynum Run, and they had a tennis court or two there. That was the only public facility for tennis in the whole county. So the need was apparent for, as more and more people came into the county, for public facilities for recreational use and park use, and there was none in the county. So it was in 1960, I believe, that the Physical Fitness Commission was formed under actually the president at that time, John Kennedy. He was a strong believer in physical fitness, organized programs, and there was no organization in the county to work with this effort. So from Annapolis, each state apparently had support to form a physical fitness commission. And here in Harford County, Hillis Hume, H-U-M-E, an All-American tackle from the Naval Academy in earlier days, came from Annapolis to help us set up a physical fitness commission, and I was the first president of that commission. We organized hikes. They were pretty well received. But when people asked me, why are you doing this, Bob, I had no real answer. I enjoyed walking and running, jogging, and did this almost daily. But how could I sell somebody else on this idea? It was very difficult. People came out at first for curious, just because they were curious, and quickly lost interest. Why should they do this? And, you know, it wasn't until somebody was able to put a status effect on this activity that people became interested. In other words, not until people could spend a lot of money for jogging shoes, a lot of money for running shorts, and for headgear, did it become popular. It became a status sport. Well, Fitness Commission was after about 3 or 4 years was replaced by an official Harford County body of the Department of Parks and Recreation. And I believe the first director of that was Pat Ravel, who did not stay long because his program here was going along so well, somebody else wanted him more than Harford County. I think he wound up in Baltimore County. And then we had John Weber. John Weber did such a good job that a county in Los Angeles, in California, near Los Angeles, hired him away from us. However, Parks and Recreation is an established concept here, and now we have the, every community has at least a ball diamond, possibly a tennis court. That's due, really, to the first Physical Fitness Commission. That's how Parks and Recreation came about. And I hope it can improve. I hope in some manner they can allocate even more spaces, more resources to promoting recreation and physical fitness at the local level, not going to Bel Air to go to a health club, health spa. That's the status part of it. But right close to home, go out, play some ball, run, ride, whatever, bicycle ride. And I hope that sort of thing will continue. So that physical fitness aspect actually comes from, I guess, the experience I had in the wrestling program at Tilden Tech. But it's necessary for the development of a whole person to have some sort of physical fitness capability. Along this line, I might mention a program that went very well for 2 years and then died a sudden death. Our Hearthside Bicycle Club, working with the Lions Club, developed a program for entertaining youngsters from the Maryland School for the Blind. The Lions Club would rent tandem bikes, and we would provide the riders and the supervision for these youngsters with disabilities, vision disabilities, and we had a great time entertaining them once a year. I think it went on for 3 years. And then the Lions Club gave it up. I was never able to get a good explanation for why the interest waned, but I guess it might have been safety. It still is hazardous to ride. Even though one person has sight, it's not that easy to have a disadvantaged person in the back seat. We had some close calls, so that could be why the program was stopped. But it was, those youngsters appreciated it very much. That was an interesting part of the Hearthside Bicycle Club experience. And surely the Lions Club was a prime mover in it too. They are interested in people who have sight problems. I don't know what other aspects you wish to cover.
Well, would you like to talk about your work getting the wrestling started throughout the county?
Well, yes, that would be interesting. There was our firstborn was a girl, and she went through high school. I would go on PTA nights and talk to her teachers, including the gym teacher. Mr. Seske was in charge of the athletic program there at Bel Air High School. I really couldn't talk to him about Suzanne because and wrestling because it's a male sport. But at that time, I did agitate for a wrestling program. One had begun 1 year at Edgewood High School, and the coach left after the first year, and the program failed. Meanwhile, North Hartford High School was having a professional wrestling troupe come out each August in conjunction with the fundraising thing they had up there. And of course, it was professional wrestling, which is farcical, was then and still is. So there wasn't any amateur wrestling in the county. I visited Mr. Susky almost every PTA meeting to inquire about possibility of getting something going. And once he said, we have a young man coming from Towson State Teachers College who will be here next year, and he is a champion wrestler. And that was Don Subrink. And Mr. Subrink began a wrestling team in January of the first year he came. That was mid-season. He was able to put on one wrestling match before the end of the season came. The next year he had an excellent team on the mat, the only team in the county. So they had to have matches with schools outside of the county. But then other schools picked it up. They saw how good the program was at Bel Air High School. Bel Air was top-notch for many years until North Harford came along and displaced them. And then Aberdeen seems to have displaced North Harford as the top-notch school. Of course, when they broke up Bel Air High School into several smaller schools, the program there suffered, and Bel Air is just coming up again. But the program, wrestling program in Harford County, is at a very high level. The coach at Aberdeen is a champion wrestler, and he's doing a wonderful job. All the schools have good programs now, all the high schools that I know. Falston, C. Milton Wright, Bel Air, Aberdeen, North Harford, Edgewood, excellent. Haverty Grace, too. So I was involved in getting that going. Mr. Subrink was awfully important also. Anything else on that?
Over the years since you came to Harford County, what are some of the changes that you've noticed, I guess, Bel Air or just throughout the whole county as itself?
Yeah. Surely the big change has been in the school system. The schools, one-room schools, did I mention that earlier? We had one-room schools in Harford County, and they persisted until perhaps 1955, I guess. But I don't wish to disparage a one-room school. They are a wonderful tool for education. Perhaps from an efficiency standpoint, mass production of instructed or educated children, it may be lacking. But there is a very rich experience to be obtained from one-room schools. The older classes teach the younger classes. There is a rub-off effect that very few people realize. So, on the other hand, it's a measure of civilization. The one-room school is gone, and we have beautiful high schools. The Board of Education has, in this county, has done a wonderful job so far in maintaining lovely grounds for the schools. All of our schools seem to be in almost a campus. There's an effort now to break up this beautiful complex, Bel Air Elementary. No, it's Homestead Elementary, Wakefield, and Bel Air High School. It's almost a half a mile long, and it goes along Route 24, a beautiful green corridor in which they have these educational facilities. And some of the people, real estate interests, want to split that, run a road through. I hope it never happens. So this is the sort of thing that I've seen in Harford County, a great change in the school system. Roads, of course, have changed. We still have a primitive public water system, I believe. It needs upgrading, or we will have the problems that you just saw here, somebody coming for a sample from my well. We have intrusion of contaminated well, I'm afraid, in one of our wells on the property. So far, our house well is okay. So this is the closing chapter of a rural life in Harford County. Here in, we are near Bynum Run here. This house is just a good quarter mile away, and that is a beautiful valley, but it's being occupied by homes. Homes mean asphalt roads and asphalt roofs, and it means that water, rainfall, runs into the run very swiftly. It does not go into the ground and slowly penetrate and eventually wind up in the run. So we lose that snubber effect, that buffer effect, and we have flood or famine. The run is either high or low, and it's hard on aquatic life there, it's hard on the beauty, and very soon the run, people will agitate to have the run placed in a conduit or a pipe, and there goes the stream valley. Nice. That's been the saddest thing of my recent life, is to see Bynum Run Valley become heavily populated, and I'm speaking of from Patterson Mill Road up into Bel Air. The stream valley is gone. Save Our Streams was a powerful organization and no longer exists. I don't know how and why the funds were taken from it, and we have our streams being destroyed. So the life in Harford County will never be as beautiful as it was. The ladies and their demand for the best in shopping. The old days, the housewife used to moan, wouldn't it be lovely to have a nice department store here in town? Well, as soon as that happens, you have people, and there goes your rural life. People cannot have both. It's either one or the other. And we're committed now, apparently, to an intense urban development, which is a sad part of life in Harford County at the present time. This is this spot here is on the fall line, a line that shows a very steep drop, a very great drop in elevation as you cross over it. And this line goes from actually Canada down to Alabama. Niagara Falls is on it, the Great Falls, the Potomac is on it, and so is Patterson Mill Road. Patterson's Mill was on it. Hooker's Mill was on it. And this is where we are. So we have this actually a somewhat slightly seismically active line that we live on right now. This is the reason the Bynum Run runs so swiftly here, and why they did have a mill there, because the faster the water goes, the more power you can get from it. This is the historical part of the county that a lot of people don't understand, don't realize, and it makes life more interesting if you know about this. And this is the reason we, my wife and I, are in the Historical Society of Harford County. I'm on the board of directors, and she's very active in maintenance of the Hayes House. It's a very rewarding experience, and we hope to preserve some of the aspects of life as it was a few years ago, for people in the years ahead are coming. What other aspects would you want to cover?
Well, could you tell us about some of your work with the Harford Historical Society?
Oh, sure, yes. We are trying to get a greater funding of the Historical Society. All of our funds right now come from our small annual dues payment. But it's possible that the state legislature can give us money. We do get a few hundred from year to year from the Culture Advisory Board. And we're trying to get some support for the work we do for the county in keeping records for the county. And we get no money for this. We are given at a very low rental rate, perhaps a dollar a year, the old hotel in the corner of 33 Cortland Street, across from the courthouse. A very interesting building on its own right. Not as old as this one, but not. On the other hand, the Hayes House down the street, a quarter mile, that would be on the grounds of the high school, actually, is very old. It goes back to before 1800 time of the formation of Harford County as it was split off from Baltimore County, let us say 1783 along in there. So we give time and money to this society. We've written a few articles for the bulletin that they publish four times a year. One of the pleasures of my retired life was helping author co-authoring an article for the bulletin of the Historical Society entitled Through the Cracks of History, Shape Notes. Now it tells about a musical notation that was invented here in this country at the earliest time. Perhaps the first patent in the country was for a system of shape notes. And hello, have a seat. Forgotten the name?
Bryson Curry.
K-E-R?
Bryson.
Curry, oh yeah. Name is familiar. My name is Bob Crackey. How do you do? It's my wife, Marion. Bryson Curry, where am I? What's into that? Education?
Teacher,
huh? I've seen that. What school?
Hickory Elementary.
Yeah.
Dublin
Elementary. Uh-huh. Uh-huh. Well, we're recalling some of the history around the Historical Society, kind of the county aspect of our existence here.
Keep right on.
It's been very interesting. Are we on now? No. Oh, we have been? This article is... It's truly basic information for people in Harford County, anyone who has the least interest in music. Harford County was on a main line of communication from New York to Washington, and there was a lot of traffic from one center to another. Methodism had its early beginning in Harford County, I guess you know that, at Cokesbury College in Abington, which is only 3 or 4 miles downstream on Bynum Run. That's where Cokesbury College was. That was formed by the pioneers of Methodism. Well, these early Methodist preachers needed music. Music was part of the religion, gospel hymns. How to teach this music without the benefit of printing presses and so forth, and no education, how to teach music to parishioners, congregation, just coming off the farm. And they found out that the shape notes were very useful. The present day round note system is pretty elaborate and takes skill of reading, but if you correlate do, re, mi with triangle, square, circle, that sort of thing, you can teach it very quickly. In fact, you don't need anything published. You don't need the staff. So you just use do, re, you use these shapes. Mm-hmm. And this system was used by the early Methodist circuit riding preachers as they evangelized and shape notes were developed in New England and came down the coast and into Pennsylvania. And Pennsylvania means Harford County because Lancaster and here is not that far. The shape note went west to Cambridgeburg and down the Shenandoah Valley, and there the music that they had, primitive music, was printed in publishing houses along the path I've just outlined. And today they have small publishing houses still printing shape note music, and that's why down south in Alabama, Tennessee, Kentucky, North Carolina, and you can buy shape note music today in Bel Air at the Christian bookstore. Still issue shape notes. It has its place in music education, especially religious music education. Mm-hmm. So I wrote about this in conjunction with Carol Bank. She's a musicologist in the county, and it was very well received. And important in learning just how music can shape events, actually.
Oh, yeah.
In fact, I believe it's related to some of the basic differences that still exist today in the British Isles, what's called the Troubles. That would be the trouble between Ireland or parts of Ireland and England. And we can trace part of this to shape notes or round notes. Round notes came in from Italy and Germany and across the channel. And the original, they had shape notes there, although I said the system was invented in New England, it had its roots in the British Isles. So, Historical Society has been a wonderful thing for us to tie into world history in this manner, actually, and world history, Harford County history.
Yeah.
Here I'm giving you a history lesson. It's interesting maybe that to know that Thomas Asbury, one of the first Methodist founders, tried to establish Methodism in Georgia, Savannah, Georgia, and failed. It was very primitive down there. It didn't take. He went back to England, revised his philosophical views, came back, and was able to get it going here in the Baltimore area, Lovely Lane, and here in Abington. That was just as important as Baltimore. Abington was just as important as and they had a very large college there. It burned down in a couple of years. On the other hand, the circuit riders that were provided and educated there in Methodism went throughout the South, through Pennsylvania, also down the coast and so forth, and into Virginia and so forth. And they all had their origins in Hartford. Not all. More than 50% had their origins in Hartford County. The circuit riding preachers in the early days, you can go to Abingdon for the source and origin of most of them. So it makes you feel more important than knowing that Hartford County had a place in the early religious formation of the country.
Are there any other changes or stories you'd like to tell us before?
I can't think of any. We learned a lot about county history by restoring this house, of course. Probably slave labor was used, maybe not, but there was a fireplace in the basement built after the house was built, and it was a rather primitive one, and we suspect that might have been quarters for a slave down there, at least until the Civil War. So we're tied into that through a house in some manner, through the method of, it's really an economic existence, I guess, that they use in those days. He perhaps had slave labor on this farm in the early days. As far as we know, this farm was formed in 1810 by a man from Philadelphia, John Sawyer, who became a respected citizen, apparently. We know that he contributed pretty heavily to the Presbyterian Church in Bel Air. That was William Sawyer. John was his son, William Sawyer. So that has made life more rewarding here in the county, too. And each piece of furniture that we have that has its origins here tells a story, and you can't get at the story unless you take it apart and work on it and so forth. So we're able to find out where there were cabinet shops, and we think from our furnishings, we think that they did a lot in Stepney, in that area there, where Route 7 and Route 40 in a second, that area there is a cabinet maker. We can trace a number of our pieces to that origin. And that might be the basis for another article, perhaps in Antiques Magazine. History in Hartford County is so valuable, so interesting, and not many people who are present-day citizens realize it. I think that's about all I can tell you. Again, I want to record how dependent I've been on my wife for help in all these things. She's enjoyed it too, although at the same time raising three kids, all of whom miss Hartford County. They come back occasionally, several times a year. So I guess I have to sign off on that then.